views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Free Fire Radio right here in the studios at KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio with Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. Linda's on assignment. I'm not. Today, the 6th of August, 7:05 in the morning, news brought to you by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Caring, compassion, community, and courage. Shasta Regional Medical Center. Healing starts here. Jared's at the helm and's got the weather.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is currently 69 degrees, and today it is going to be smoky with a high of 100 degrees, a low of 66. Tomorrow, patchy smoke with a high of 103, a low of 66. On Sunday, high of 99, a low of 66, and on Monday, a high of 99 with a low of 67.
Okay, the weather report's brought to you by Shasta Gas Propane, a better-known business right here in Redding. I'm sorry, based in Anderson. That, you know what, the propane's the same, my friends. It's the customer service and, how they treat you. And there's nobody better than Shasta Gas Propane. Discounts for seniors and veterans. Give them a call at 365-3793. Today, the air quality index is 170. That means it's unhealthy, especially if you have any type of respiratory problems. And for healthy people, you should try to stay out of the outdoors as much as possible. Yeah, so be aware of that. Shasta Lake is level is 918 feet. It's 148 feet from the top. We're going to get into fires later on, but I would just like to thank everybody for all those wonderful birthday wishes from yesterday. Jared sends me a picture of a horse holding a happy birthday. That was cute. It was just really nice. I'm not going to cut into Haven Humane's time here, but went to the Tiger Field last night. They have a band named Lance something Cromwell's band, Cornwell's band. What a great group they are. Country Western, and somehow went from Country Western and went into Michael Jackson for one song. And this guy's great. Had a super time. So if you haven't been down there, you need to get down there. It's just a great time. Okay, I'm here with Katrina from Haven Humane. And you've got a beautiful dog here.
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a good lab mix here. He's about 4 years old. His name's Boston. He's really cute. He's chocolate brown, and he's got the little white socks and white-tipped tail and some white on his face.
Yeah.
And he's quite a tall boy, as you saw. He's very long and lean.
Yeah, he's not a pity.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
But he's a really sweet guy. He does take a little time to warm up. Like, as you can see, he's a little nervous right now being in a new location. But he's honestly a really sweet dog. He's the kind of dog that'll just follow you around all day and want to, like, be near you pretty often. He does know some tricks. He knows how to sit, of course, for a treat. And he also is crate trained.
Uh-huh.
Fun fact, so if you're someone who is gone from the house often.
You can probably hear him in the background going, yeah!
Right? So he is crate trained, so that's good for people who aren't home very often. And he's pretty chill with everyone. He doesn't mind other dogs. He's fine with cats. He's fine with kids. He will chase your chickens, though.
Mm.
So make sure you keep them locked up in the coop if he's around.
Yeah.
But he's just a really good family
dog.
Probably
he looks like he's got, you know, there could be some, like you said, lab in that dog. Even German short hair. And, you know, they are bird dogs. So that may be, he may be thinking that's part of his job. He just doesn't know yet, but he can be trained away from that.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to go for runs, this looks like the perfect dog to go with you. If you like to run with your dog, this dog looks like he could go miles with you or walks. This would be a super dog. He's been sitting here next to Katrina since you walked in. He's just got all this energy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, okay. So how do you adopt them? If you want to go in today, How do you adopt them?
So, similar to last week, if you want to come check out Boston, no appointment necessary. Just come on down, visit with him, and hopefully you can make him a part of your family.
Boston, it is a good name for him. Okay, we've got things coming up.
Yes, we do. We actually have a really cool event coming up. It's a first-time event for Haven. It's called Make a Difference. It's happening on August 28th. We're partnering with four other local nonprofits, and it's going to be a free event for people to come out, find out what we're about, what we do, and some information on if they would like to volunteer for us or the other organizations that are going to be there. There's going to be food trucks, there's going to be activities, and of course, we're going to be there with some dogs, so make sure to come out and see us. It's going to be located at Pathways to Hope for Children over off Benton Drive, and I'll also give you some more information about that next week.
Okay, great. Katrina, thank you so much. Hey, people, this dog Boston, we've got photos of Boston on our chat room. And, I'm gonna have Pat send me one so I can put it on Facebook too. But this is a good looking dog. This dog is, I'd say lab, as much as, but it's got the chocolate, kind of chocolate lab, but also those white markings, and so it makes it special. Makes Boston special. So.
Oh, definitely.
So give them a call over there and take Boston home. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For what you do. Give Mark a hug.
I shall.
Okay. Well, or whatever you do over there. Okay. Hey, I want to give a quick update on fires here. I mean, the fires are just totally out of control. I want to talk about firefighters here for a second. We have friends, and Linda was devastated yesterday because we have very close friends that are up in Antelope Creek and have a ranch up there. It's a beautiful ranch. That's where we spend our New Year's Eves. And we're such nice people. And they built this ranch. They bought the original the original ranch, but they've done so much work on it. And they have a caretaker because they're not up there all the time. And the fire came up Antelope, up the streams. And he was out there with the fire truck at Cal Fire. I can never say enough about our firefighters. Cal Fire was up there. They were trying to, they were building a fire break because they are fighting the Antelope fire close in. I saw a report on that this morning. They're fighting them close in. And then also making other, fighting it at a longer distance, making more fire breaks. Anyway, the fire erupted and it literally chased out the firefighters in SIG, who's the caretaker. They were running their cars, trucks down the road with fire burning on either side. That's where it was. And his report was, I just don't see how anything survived. Devastated our friends. Devastated everybody. Anyway, I get a phone call last night. He says, are you sitting down? And I wasn't, but tell me. The fire was moving so fast, almost like a firenado, that it ran on either side of the buildings they had. There was just not all houses, buildings like the barn and all that. It ran on either side, and it looks like they had a miracle, literally had a miracle. But the other thing he told me was this, Tenet was in deep danger. And he said there were something like 300 firefighters fighting house to house in Tenet to save houses, house to house, and saved most of the homes in Tenet too. What can you say? This is why we've got a sign out in front of our studio, right in front of our window here, that Shasta County thanks our firefighters. I can't say enough about it. When somebody asks me what kind of birthday present you want, hey, I just want people's homes to be saved. And, damn it, firefighters, those are good people. 7:14 in the morning. I'll start giving an update on that. It was. Oh, and thank you so much for all the well wishes and nice things that were said. Even if you didn't mean them, I believed them. So, 7:14 in the morning, and this portion of the show brought to you by SST Oil. Yeah, because SST Oil is out in that firefighting too. Nope, they're not holding hoses and they're not getting fire breaks, but they are delivering the fuel to make sure that the firefighters have the fuel they need to fight, and the tankers, the to be able to do the fire retardant drops and to make sure the engines get what they have, and the chainsaws and the bulldozers and all that. That's SST Oil. They've been in our community since 1967. It's an employee-owned community. They have the CFN card, which is good in like 65,000 places. We use that. And they are just genuinely good people. Genuinely good people who care about our community. And if you're looking for a job and you're a driver, you're not going to find a better place to drive than SST Oil. Like I said, employee-owned. They know what their employees need. Okay, 7:15 in the morning, and we're going to take a quick break and come back with Talk-O-Rama with Maria Donna.
Listening to people who are angry all the time?
Try listening to Armstrong and Getty from 9 to noon right after Free Fire Radio.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
It's Friday, and now it's time for a brand new segment, Talkorama with Maria Donna. Hi, I'm Maria Donna. Throughout the week, I interview nearby residents and ask them how they really feel about what's happening around them.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning, Carl.
And we missed you a week, but you were just being careful.
Yes, I was.
You had been exposed to COVID.
Yes, I just got vaccinated. So.
Okay, well, good on you there. So, what's this about this week?
So this week was exciting. I went around and asked people what they think about the reopening of Wind River Casino, which I guess I'm legally allowed to ask this question since I'm over 21. Kidding aside, though, the answers I got lean towards one side.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, good morning. What's your name?
Allie,
where are you from?
I'm from Reading.
And how do you think the reopening of the Wind River Casino impact Reading in general and the residents of Reading?
Well, some people look at gambling as an innocent pastime, a stress reliever. Also, it's known also as a way of financially supporting the community. Or, you know, some people just go hoping for, you know, to make a little bit more money. And then again, for some, it's an addiction. So, you know, it's got its pros and it's got its cons. But for me, I would rather help those in need. I am one who likes to help the needy and feed the poor and the hungry.
Directly, not like through gambling.
Right, yeah. Directly, mm-hmm. Yeah, not through gambling, yeah. I just, I don't know, sometimes it's just a, you know, kind of like a false dream that mm-hmm. we think we're going to go to the casino and get rich, and it usually doesn't work that way, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So I would just, I just choose to spend my money a little bit in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's okay to do that once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good morning. What's your name?
Danielle.
Hi, Danielle. What do you think about the reopening of the Wind River Casino and how it impacts Reading and the residents?
I guess with people coming back in and spending money, it's going to provide, you know, revenue for Wind River. So then, in turn, you know, they're taxes, I guess, would be higher, and they'd have to pay more taxes, and that would go towards the state to pay for roads or state buildings, state-funded programs. So I think it would probably help the state and the, you know, community surrounding areas.
So you think it's a good thing?
I mean, yeah, I think so, because I'm sure, and just with employees that work there, I'm sure a lot of employees lost their jobs, too, just with not meeting as many people, and so, therefore, families probably lost out. I think it would be good, because they can bring their employees back, and those families could live again.
Yeah.
And make their money, and, you know, so I think it would be a good thing.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Good morning. What's your name?
My name's Courtney.
Hi, Courtney. And what do you think about the reopening of the Wind River Casino and how it impacts Reading and its residents?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reopening of the casino is great for our local economy. It's also great for our local business leaders to have that venue to be able to continue their networking that they were able to do before COVID. I think it's a great opportunity for the community to have a place to kind of all come together and a place to unwind again.
You think it's a good thing?
I think in a way, yes.
And you don't mind, like, people spending their money on, like, gambling and stuff?
No, I think it's, you know, everybody has their own prerogative and that's their own free will as to what they want to choose to spend their money on to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, thank you.
Hi, good morning. What's your name?
Kim.
Hi, Kim. Where are you from?
Reading, California.
And what do you think about the reopening of the Wind River Casino and how it impacts the Redding and its residents?
I think it's awesome. It's good for our economy to open back up, as long as they don't have to wear masks, I guess. But it's good for us. We need it. We need to go back to normal.
And have you been there before?
A few times. Not much, but I'm not much of a gambler.
Mm-hmm. What can you say about gambling?
Oh, God. Some people love it, and I don't really necessarily think it's good for you, but that's my own opinion.
Mm-hmm. All right, so overall you think the reopening of the casino is good?
Yeah, it's good for our economy. Mm-hmm. We need it. People need socialization and to get back to normal.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, anytime.
Okay. Well, it sounds like everybody's saying, oh, I think it's okay. You know, where they may not be gambling, but they see the things that the Redding Rancheria has accomplished in our town and the support it's given our town.
Yes. Each and every one of them agreed that the reopening of the casino is good for the town's economy, and the fact that everything seems to be going back to normal also signifies hope for everyone. And regardless of how you want to spend your money, I think as long as you're being responsible, it's all good.
Well, you know what? I'll just tell you is that Linda and Lisa and Ted and I go down there, and Ted and I get on the 21 tables, and Lisa and Linda get on the slot machines. And, you know, it's like everything else, in moderation.
Yeah.
And there are people that unfortunately are addicted to gambling. But they've got programs for it. You see it everywhere in the casino. If you're having a problem, call this number. They're aware of it, and they get word out, this is what you can do.
Yeah.
But it's like people that are, you know, addicted to anything.
Yeah,
They've got to see it first.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do any good for people to force it on them. So.
Yeah.
Now, next week we're going to be talking fire.
Yes.
And your question's going to have to do with that.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited.
Well, I can't wait to hear what mm-hmm. people are saying about this. I mean, but thank you, young lady.
Thank you.
For coming in here. And, people always talk to you.
Yeah.
Do you show them your press badge?
I do, yes.
Oh, okay, so it's like
mm-hmm.
it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Very proud of it.
We're very proud of you.
Thank you.
And I wish everybody out there could meet Maria Donna, because she is such a nice person. And you're busy all day with your job. What do you think about this fire? You didn't have this back home, did you? Fires like this?
No.
Back
there's
in the Philippines?
No forest fires in the Philippines. No, but we do have a lot of typhoons.
That's true.
So I kind of compare those two, because the government is really not doing a lot about it.
Well, you know what? Isn't it funny how you get typhoons here, they're not doing much about it. We get fires here. And there's got to be some questions asked about this. And today on the show at 7:30, Larry Elder, who is candidate for governor, is going to join us. And we've only got him for like 15 minutes, as you can imagine. He's very busy. And then Congressman Doug LaMalfa on at 8 o'clock. And there's going to be some questions about this.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Okay. Hey, as I said, we're going to have Larry Elder on, and we're going to have Congressman Doug LaMalfa on. I want to talk to Congressman LaMalfa about what's going on at Orville Dam. The water's gotten so low that the electricity generators have been turned off. And I think I've got to go back and look at it, but it's hundreds of thousands of homes that relied on that energy for electricity. And what happens now? And with Larry Elder, here's a man that didn't have to do this. Why did he get into this fight? All right, we'll be right back after these messages.
Once again, it's Talkorama with Maria Donna. Be sure to join me Fridays right here on KCNR. Throughout the week, I hit the streets and ask residents how they feel about what's really happening in our community, in our state, country, or world. Let your voice be heard on KCNR.
Join us Wednesday, August 4th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Wind River Resort and Casino in Redding Rancheria for our annual Discover Health Fair. A day filled with free health screenings, information, crafting vendors, and much more. All ages are welcome to this free event with special activities for the kids. Contact Tim Rodriguez at 530-226-1734 or Kaylee Capobianco at 530-339-7457. Brought to you by the Redding Rancheria Tribal Health System, Redding Rancheria, and Wind River Resort and Casino.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Redding, Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Sweet. Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. with the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot with Carl and Linda Bott. And on the line, we have a candidate for governor in the recall, Larry Elder. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know what? Your voice sounds familiar because, you know, and letting everybody know is we have the Larry Elder Show on our station. So
I am well aware of that. I appreciate it.
You know, Larry, you are known as the Sage of South Central, and we only have you here for a little bit. You said in your vision of this that you'd love to, you know, I hate to have to run. I just don't believe I have the stomach, the temperament, the personality to put up with the doofuses in Sacramento. What changed your mind?
Yeah, I also, Carl, said two things could happen. I could lose, I could win. Both are bad.
Be careful what you ask for, huh?
Right. What changed my mind, why I'm asking people to go to electelder.com and throw a little something in the tip jar, is I just did a little more research and I found out, surprise, surprise, not a single bill that's been vetoed has been overridden in almost 40 years in California. Even though Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed a bunch of stuff, Jerry Brown, who often governed a lot more sensibly than Arnold Schwarzenegger did, vetoed a bunch of stuff. And what happens is you veto some stupid bill, you go to the public and tell them why you vetoed it. The phone starts ringing of the state senators and of the state assembly persons, and then they realize they shouldn't have introduced the bill. What they then do, of course, is lay low and reintroduce it later on, but it turns out that you can really do something even though you're dealing with a hostile legislature. And as you know, two-thirds Democrats in both chambers of our legislature, you have the power to declare a statewide emergency, which I intend to do on homelessness, to suspend some of the environmental, extremist laws that have prevented people from building homes. That's why we have a situation in California where the average price of a home is 150% more than the average price of a home in America. It is outrageous. I also have a line item veto. I have the ability to appoint various people to these commissions. These are the commissions that make lives much more difficult for Californians, putting all these rules and regulations that, for example, hold up fracking, the attack on the oil and gas industry. That's going to be reversed if I'm lucky enough to get up there. And then, of course, you have the ability to have the bully pulpit where you just go forward and talk about things. And I'm a radio host like you are, and for 27 years I've talked about issues like crime and homelessness and the outrageous cost of living in California, and I think I can explain things in ways that Joe and Joan Stickpack can understand, and I've got some ideas about what we could do to turn it around.
You know, the two things that are huge here, everywhere, mm-hmm. crime and homelessness.
Right.
What ideas do you have on this?
The first thing is we have to change the narrative regarding the police officers. This whole thing, both nationally and statewide, that the police are engaging in systemic racism against black people, that they're using deadly force disproportionately against black people and brown people, it's just a lie. It's an absolute lie. There have been study after study after study showing, Carl, if anything else, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on the black suspect than the white suspect. And the reason that's important is because this lie has caused the police officers all over the country to pull back and engage in passive policing as opposed to proactive policing that's been responsible for a drop in crime. You know, think about it. You're going to be accused of systemic racism. Why should you stick your neck out? So you stick in the car, you respond to radio calls, you don't engage in getting out of the car when you see some suspicious activity. Bad guys know it. Crime goes up, and the very people who are disproportionately hurt by that are the black and brown people that the left claims they care about. Then you have these two soft-on-crime DAs in San Francisco and also in Los Angeles, both of whom would not have gotten there but for George Soros' money. They believe in cashless bail. They're letting people out, and crime has gone up. Hell, even Barbara Boxer the other day got mugged in Oakland. The governor was attacked by a mentally ill homeless person, and had the governor not had his security detail, who knows what would have happened. So that rhetoric has to change. And during this pandemic, Gavin Newsom has overseen the release, early release, of 20,000 convicted felons, many of whom were convicted of violent crimes. What could possibly go wrong? So I'm going to have to change that narrative. And regarding homelessness, you know, these are people that are primarily mentally ill or they're addicted to something. They need to be treated. And this housing first attitude, which is what Gavin Newsom and the Democrats have done, all you're doing is building housing, by the way, considerably higher cost than if the private sector built it. There's no reason for people to get up and go to the streets, get out of the streets and get into these homes anyway, and if they did, they wouldn't stay. You have to deal with the underlying cause of why they're there. And that's something that ought to be involved with churches and nonprofits. The government doesn't know how to do it. And then once people are, to some degree, self-sufficient, where are they going to live? Where are they going to go? Housing is so expensive. There's no low-cost apartments. So I'm going to suspend CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, so that I can unleash all these private sector developers and contractors who are waiting to build homes. But until you get the churches involved, until you get the nonprofits involved, who can hopefully give these people some sort of spiritual awakening and get them treatment, you're not going to solve the problem. All you're doing is telling other people from other states, cold weather climates, you know, I can go to Los Angeles, and I can go to the Bay Area, I can go to San Diego, warm weather climate, I can get free needles and maybe a free home, come on down. So cops are telling me a whole bunch of people, not even from California, are coming here and taking advantage of our care and compassion, which everybody deserves, but also taking advantage of things like free housing. So all that's got to be changed. I talked to Dr. Ben Carson just a couple of days ago, Carl, about all of this, and he had a plan that he was ready to implement had the Trump administration had a second term. And it was partnering with the mayor of Los Angeles, using large swaths of federal land to build low-cost housing while getting people on the streets treatment. And I said, can this problem be solved? He said, absolutely it can be solved.
You know, you're just speaking common sense here that reaches out to so many people. The one thing up here in Northern California, we're on fire. We're on fire all the time, Larry. And I'm not just talking about fire. I'm talking about fire.
I know what you're talking about.
People, or politicians, have been talking about this for decades. What would you do?
Well, some of this is God made. You know, the climate, and it is getting a bit warmer. I don't believe that climate change is a huge factor here, but it is a factor. And we've always had fires here in California. The Indians used to do fire burning. But the fallen trees and the dried vegetation has not been cleared. And Gavin Newsom promised to clear up, 500,000 acres, and it turns out about the amount he's cleared, he lied by a factor of seven, or misled by a factor of seven. Jerry Brown left a plan to clear some of the dry vegetation. It wasn't followed. We need to at least do that. And if you notice, the forests that are on private land are managed a lot better than the forests that are on state and federal land. Why? Because there's an incentive on the part of people who own land not to keep it combustible the way it is. So I'm going to try and do something about clearing all this vegetation. I just had a briefing just the other day with a couple of fire experts, and they said that is, first of all, job number one.
Well, that, you know, many of the, you know, after it burns through there, we can harvest those logs that are burnt, and they can still be used, and then, of course, it leaves less tinder for the next time it burns
through there. That's right.
Larry, you've got so many things. Well, here's one of the questions that came in. Are you going to get up to the North State? I know you're busy, but people would love to come see you.
Absolutely, I will. And I've been traveling up and down this state, and I'm definitely going to get up to the North State. You know, I'm going to be the governor of California, the entire state, and every region has its own challenges, its own problems, and I'm going to be the governor of the entire state. I'm looking forward to it.
Orville Dam just shut down their generators, water.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the site's reservoir has been, you know, there's been money approved, I don't know, 20 years ago?
For 20 years, and then, yeah. And then you have temperance for 20 years, and, you know, the voters have passed bond measure after bond measure after bond measure, set aside billions of dollars, and not a damn thing happens. They sit there around and study and study and study and fight off lawsuits. This war on water is going to stop. As you know, the water infrastructure in California was built for a state half the population, has not been added to appreciably in almost 40 years. It is ridiculous. One of my many advisors is former Secretary of State Bill Jones, the last Republican Secretary of State we've had. Third-generation farmer. We need to build more underground reservoirs, obviously. We need to look at desalination. Many of these could be private sector. And half the water is being drained off into the Pacific Ocean. It's ridiculous. Israel is a desert country. Dubai is a desert country. Both of them are now water self-sufficient because of desalination. They have a little body of water called the Mediterranean. We have a little body of water called the Pacific Ocean. We can't figure this out, Carl. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I agree. I agree. The other thing, too, is reclaimed water. That we're not using the reclaimed water as we should.
That's exactly right. There's a book that I've been reading called The Winning the Water Wars by Stephen Greenhut.
Uh-huh.
He's also a guy that I've been talking to a lot about all of this. And, of course, that should be done. You know, how these guys sit around for 40 years and let the state get bigger and bigger and bigger without addressing the infrastructure for just not only water but also power is outrageous. And that's going to change when I get up there. And part of it is, as I said earlier, Carl, it's going to be the bully pulpit. I think a lot of people in California turn on the spigot, the water comes out, they have no idea, the farmers in the middle of the state, they have to plow under their crops because they can't get enough water. I talked to an almond grower who told me he's not getting enough water. And they're just now told they're going to be restricting the water supply to hundreds of farmers because we don't have enough, because when we have rainy seasons, we're not storing it enough. As I mentioned earlier, half of it goes off the Pacific Ocean. It is outrageous.
You know, this has been going on for years, Larry, and can one man make that big a difference?
Carl, hold my beer. I'm not going up there to be friends. I'm not going up there to be like, that was Arnold Schwarzenegger's problem. He came out of Hollywood, used to people fawning all over him because he was a Terminator, and when he began making some comments about the teachers' union, about the firefighters, about the public sector unions, and about the nurses' union, he all of a sudden just completely caved because he was not used to people disliking him. I've been called an Uncle Tom for, 27, 30 years,
yeah,
I've been called
yeah.
a sellout. I'm used to people not liking me. In fact, I don't know what it's like to be fawned over. Again, I'm not going up there to make friends. Two-thirds of the legislature, as we pointed out, are Democrats, and they're the ones who are causing all of these problems, and there's going to be a new sheriff in town.
We're here with Larry Elder, who is running for governor. We've been getting questions. Hey, do you have a website, you know, with all your points on it? He does.
Electelder.com. Electelder.com. Everything is up there, and also would give you an opportunity to throw something in the tip jar, because my opponent, Gavin Newsom, will be able to raise and spend an unlimited amount of money, Carl. And I've already read that he's raised $39 million. He's probably going to spend a minimum of $50, maybe even $75 million to defeat me. I have campaign expenditure limits. He does not. So I'm going to need help from people in California and outside California who often say, when you guys leave California, you bring your politics with them. Well, that's because people haven't connected the dots. There's a reason that for the first time in our state's history, people are leaving, and the primary reason people are leaving, these are people making between $50K and $100K, they can't get a house. And then they go somewhere else, and they bring their Democrat policies with them because they haven't connected the dots. There's a reason that there's a housing shortage, and the reason are these left-wing people in Sacramento that have a war on development, that don't believe in growth, they don't believe in abundance, they believe in scarcity. That's what they believe, and that's why we're having these problems.
We're talking to Larry Elder, who is candidate for governor in this recall. His website is electelder.com.
Electelder.com. That's right.
Right. And somebody asked about these positions you're taking. If you go to the vision part of his website, he lays it all out there very succinctly, and the problems that we're facing in our state. And I think is it going to be like an elephant? You got to take it one bite at a time?
Probably. I mean, one of the things that Arnold Schwarzenegger did wrong is he put five different initiatives on, and that was just too much for people to absorb. He lost all five, and all of a sudden he did a 180 and became left wing. That's not going to happen with me. I'm going to try to make sure that what I do is well thought out so that we can actually make some concrete progress and people can see what's going on. We haven't talked about Carl, the way he shut down this state.
Oh, yeah.
In the most severe way than any of the other 49 states, while engaging in flaunting the very mandates that he was putting down the throats of us. Here he is at that French Laundry restaurant with the very people that drafted the mandates, not socially distancing, not wearing masks, exempting his own kids from in-person. His kids enjoyed in-person private education. His own winery was exempted from the mandates. And about a third, I understand, of all small businesses have been shuttered forever. I ran a small business for 14 years. It didn't go bankrupt. I didn't liquidate it. I sold it, and it kept going on for years and years. So I know how difficult it is to run a business. And most businesses limp from payroll to payroll, and this guy just destroyed the hopes and dreams of countless numbers of Californians by putting these mandates down the throats of people. We could have figured it out. I had my shot. I'm an old man. I'll be 70 in April. I've got comorbidities, but there are a lot of people who've made the decision not to get the shot for whatever reason. Isn't this America? Isn't this freedom? And why couldn't we let restaurants figure out how to open, how to stay open, or not stay open if they didn't want to? They could have figured it out, but to shut down the state the way he did, and only about half the jobs have been recovered pre-pandemic, whereas nationwide two-thirds have. Look at Washington. Look at this man. He's got to go.
You know, I think a lot of people believe that. And and the part about that one day, on a Monday afternoon at noon, and he shut down all the restaurants that day. On a Monday at noon,
right.
How many millions of dollars was lost when people had already bought their food, bought their produce,
right.
and then shuttered them?
Right.
The impact, and they talk about following the science. If only the science meets with their own twisted objectives.
That's exactly right. And kids lost a whole year of in-school education. 80% of the kids educated K through 12 public schools, Carl, are black and brown. 75% of black kids before the pandemic could not read at state levels of proficiency, and those levels aren't high. Half of third graders cannot read at state levels of proficiency. I went to a high school called Crenshaw High School, inner city. I just checked, 2% of kids at my former high school are math proficient. 2%, who the hell sends their kid to a school where only 2% can do math? And I'm going to give choice. I'm going to let the money follow the child rather than the other way around, so parents can determine whether they want to put the kid in a public school or a private school or a charter school or a religious school. So since we are able to do that with college and with graduate school, for some reason, there's a no-fly zone over the money spent on K through 12. I'm going to turn that around, too.
And, you know, and you're absolutely right. You know, people get in trouble because they have no future. They believe they have no future. And if they're not educated, they just believe that they have no future. So there's no use trying.
Well, they don't. If you don't graduate from high school, presumably one where you can read, write, and compute at grade level, it's going to be very difficult for you to have a future. And forget about Elder. There's a left-wing think tank called the Brookings Institution, and they said there's a three-step process to leave poverty, go to the middle class. Number one, finish high school. Again, presumably one where you can read, write, and compute at grade level. And all too often, the ones in the inner city who do graduate and they go on to a junior college or to a four-year school, they've got to take remedial math and remedial English because the school system was so bad. Again, this is outrageous. And two-thirds of black parents in my district, Los Angeles district, say they don't want to send their kids back to those schools in the fall because they were able to watch the virtual learning and see how bad the education was. And they believe properly that the worst teachers, the worst principals, the worst administrators end up in South Central LA, in the inner city. They're not in the west side. They're not in the valley. They're in the inner city where the kids need good teachers the most. So I'm going to turn that around, too, if I'm fortunate enough to be elected governor.
Do I have you for another minute? Or do you have to run?
You do.
You have, on your vision, you talked about about teaching kids that their whole life is based on color.
Mm-hmm.
And you had some pretty powerful things to say about that.
Well, this whole narrative, Carl, that America is systemically racist, what a crock. Pick up your magic wand, wave it over America, and remove every smidgen of racism from the hearts of white people. Now, everybody white thinks like Mother Teresa. Do we still have the phenomenon where 70% of black kids are brought into the world without a father married to the mother? Do we still have a phenomenon where there's a 50% dropout rate in many of our inner-city high schools? Do we still have the phenomenon where the number one cause of preventable death for young whites is accidents, like car accidents? Number one cause of preventable death for young blacks, homicide, almost always at the hands of another young black person. Do we still have the phenomenon where a young black person, Carl, is 8 times more likely to be murdered compared to a young white person? If the answer to those series of questions is yes, then I submit to you systemic racism is not the problem, and critical race theory and reparations are not the answer.
Larry Elder, running for governor, and we so much appreciate your time with us today.
Carl, thank you so much. much. God bless. ElectElder.com. ElectElder.com.
Yeah, go to that. You're going to see everything that that Larry Elder believes in, the things he can do, and he addresses every one of these and more under Elder.com. If you look at, of course, your bio is just spectacular, and when they say the sage of South Central, they mean it. So,
Charles, thank you. Got to run.
You bet. Good luck.
God bless.
Okay. Larry Elder. Wow. That was... He can get a lot of facts out, you know, and let's just face it, you know what I mean? Let's just say it. He's a radio talk show host and has been very successful at that. But, and he said, and I've seen that, he's been attacked because he is a conservative black man who actually has the tremendity, the intestinal fortitude, the testicular energy to say, hey, things are wrong here. We need to take a look at the systemic problems facing our people of color. And it starts right there, and getting them through schools, as we, you know, the young men and women that were in the Marines with me in Fallujah and Ramadi and other places, it was much safer for them to be at the height of the war going on. It was safer for them to be outside in the wire patrolling than it would have been statistically to walk down the streets of their city. Yeah. Okay, we've got to take a quick break. This portion of the show brought to you by our friends over at Cornerstone Community Bank. Cornerstone Community Bank is just going bonkers out there. They've grown so quickly. They are adding people. It's locally owned, local board of directors. Of course, it's locally run, too, and managed. They've got three branches, one in Red Bluff at 500 Riverside Way, one downtown here at 1845 California Street, and, of course, the main branch at 192 Hartnell Avenue in the Cobblestone Shopping Center, and soon to open up the newest branch down in Anderson. They have been moving local dreams forward since the day they opened. Learn more at bankcornerstone.com. We'll be right back.
Summer takes flight at Turtle Bay, the Wings of Summer Butterfly Exhibit, open June 19th through August 15th. Experience hundreds of butterflies in a tranquil and enclosed garden. Access is free for Turtle Bay members and included with park admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
What is a hero? A hero serves when no one else is ready to. A hero helps everyone, never asking for any praise. They stand ready to do whatever is needed. They have picked up the mantle of heroism when we have needed it the most, and their tireless dedication can never be appreciated enough. We want to thank all of our local heroes. We could not get through these times without their courage. We thank you for everything that you do.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Dinorama presents Brews by the Bridge at Turtle Bay Exploration Park on Friday, August 13th. Join us at the Sundial Bridge for this 21 and over event featuring craft beers, live music, tasty food, and more. Get your tickets today at the Turtle Bay Museum or online at turtlebay.org.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot. It is 7:55 in the morning. We went over, but that was good because we had Larry Elder here. You know what? When I reached out to him, because I'm trying to reach out to all the gubernatorial candidates, of course, you know, Kevin Kiley, Ted Gaines, Larry Elder, yeah, the ones that I know of, you know. I don't know how much longer Caitlin's going to be in it, from what I understand, according to the, of course, this is according to the news that she's running out of money, and so that's difficult for somebody to run with that. So we're going to try and get everybody on to hear what they're saying. He talked fast, but you could go to elder, electelder.com, something like, just Google that. You know, I read something. Yeah, I read the News Cafe. I read it. And Donnie published a letter from some woman. I shouldn't do this, especially at night before I go to bed. But the woman, no, I think this could, anyway. She was, she's been coming, she doesn't live here in Redding, but she's been coming to Redding and Shasta County for 15 years. And she said, I love the people. Oh gosh, what a great place. Well, she goes to one of the parks while she's here and she sees a guy, one guy. He's got a swastika on his arm. Now, the swastika is an abhorrent symbol. You know, my dad fought in World War II. My mom was also a member of the armed forces in during World War II. Our family has fought against things like this, these ideas, for, gosh, you know what? Generations. And they're following, you know, and my son and my grandson is planning on joining the Marines, too. So I think it's an abhorrent symbol. But then she writes about, oh, well, the people of Shasta County and Redding must, you know, think this is okay. And I'm never going to come back here again. And I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to get on social media. You know, I don't know why you would publish a letter like this, because it tells me, for 15 years, you've come to our town, been welcomed by our citizens. What she said in this, and because she saw one person wearing a swastika, she's never going to come back here again. Well, let me tell you, ma'am, try to go to any city or town in America over 300 people. You may see this symbol on somebody. It's somebody pointed out, you know, prison tats. It could be anything. But to not go come to our city and slam it that way, is there something wrong with you? For 15 years you've been coming here, you see one, and automatically we're all bad people, and this is a horrible place to go to. Go, you know, have you been to L.A.? Have you been to San Francisco? Have you been to San Diego? Have you been to Modesto? Have you been to Bakersfield? Have you been to New York? Have you been, you know what? I can go on and on throughout the world that I've traveled. And guess what? Every so often you see it. Do I blame the people in Croatia because one person I saw has that? No. There's too many great people in Croatia. And to slam our city like this and to publish that letter is wrong. One person in 15 years you've seen, and automatically we are all thrown under the bus. I think that she's lying. I think that, no, I think that she probably saw that. But to negate 15 years of being welcome in our community for that is totally ridiculous. She's not going to find a place on this planet, perhaps. Well, maybe in parts of Africa, maybe. That she may not see the symbol. So my whole comment on that was, I think it was ludicrous. Yes, we should be concerned about it, but 15 years, you see one person? How ridiculous. After the news, Congressman Lamoff is going to join us, and we're going to be talking fire and water.
KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
The July job numbers are in, and they're better than economists were expecting. American employers added 943,000 jobs last month.
When you look across sectors, it was pretty widespread. So the only exception where we saw a decline was retail, and that was after a really solid gain in June. But one of the key sectors in for the July numbers was leisure and hospitality. So the fact that as we continue to see the service sector reopen, people get out and about and do more things in person.
Wells Fargo senior economist Sarah House says the unemployment rate dipped to 5.4%. Missouri Democratic Congresswoman Cori Bush continuing to call for defunding the police, while at the same time saying she's willing to spend $200,000 on private security to protect herself. As for the critics, an unapologetic Bush says they should, quote, suck it up. Devastated by the massive Dixie wildfire, the small town of Greenville in Northern California is only a shadow of its former self. Loomis County Sheriff Todd Johns tells Cal Fire that those who remain must be ready to evacuate at a moment's notice.
These fires are making tremendous runs, or this fire, making tremendous runs, and it is sometimes very difficult to try to get yourself prepped and out of the way before the fire actually gets there.
The sheriff says his heart is crushed by the destruction in Greenville, adding that the lives of its residents are forever changed. Watching Wall Street, in the wake of the July jobs report, stocks are mixed. Right now, the Dow is up 130 points, while the NASDAQ is trading 83 points lower, and the S&P 3 points higher. More on these stories at townhall.com.
This summer, we all want to reconnect with friends and family, and the team at Legacy Box can help you make the most of your time together by enabling you to revisit classic memories while creating new ones. Legacy Box is an affordable way to have footage of family trips, weddings, and other milestones trapped on home movies and photos safely stored on a thumb drive, DVD, or the cloud. The process is remarkably simple. Just follow the guide from Legacy Box's all-inclusive kit, and their experienced team will create digital copies of your videotapes, film reels, and photos. Soon you'll have everything saved on the format of your choice, along with your originals. Imagine highlights from the past, digitally preserved and always ready to share, whether you're telling stories on the porch, relaxing by the pool, or gathering for a barbecue. Even better, Legacy Box is offering 50% off this week. Visit legacybox.com/lbox to take advantage of this limited-time offer and ensure your past is always within reach. That's legacybox.com/lbox to save 50%. legacybox.com/lbox.
Hezbollah has fired a barrage of rockets at Israeli positions close to the Lebanese border, calling it retaliation for Israeli airstrikes on southern Lebanon a day earlier. Israel says it's firing back after at least 10 rockets were launched from Lebanon.
The second time this week, people in northern Israel have scrambled to shelters under rocket fire from Lebanon. The Lebanese group Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran, has claimed responsibility for the attack. At least 10 rockets were fired at Israel. Most were intercepted by the country's Iron Dome defense system, but several struck Israeli territory. Israel has responded with artillery fire. No casualties have been confirmed. Tensions on the border have escalated in recent days, with Israel unleashing airstrikes yesterday against targets in southern Lebanon following rocket attacks on Wednesday. Israel's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who's been in office less than 2 months, is meeting senior defense officials to discuss their ongoing response.
The BBC's Jenny Hill in Jerusalem. News and analysis, townhall.com. This year's Gulf of Mexico dead zone is larger than average.
Scientists have determined that the area off the coast of Louisiana and Texas covers about 6,334 square miles. The average size of the area when there's too little oxygen to support marine life has been 5,380 square miles over the past 5 years. Officials say that the area could have been larger than the average size zone it predicted in June because Mississippi River discharge that drained into the Gulf was above normal for the 3 weeks before the survey. John Scott reporting.
Qatar Airways says it has grounded 13 Airbus A350s over deterioration of the plane's fuselage. The move further escalates a months-long dispute with the European airplane maker. Says the aircraft will be grounded until such time as a root cause can be established, a satisfactory solution made available. More on these stories, townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR. 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot. Phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming live at KCNR1460.com. 8:05 in the morning here on the 6th of August. News brought to you by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Caring, compassion, community, and courage. Shasta Regional Medical Center. Healing starts here. Jared's here with our weather, and let's try and take it out more than 4 days.
Well, you know,
if you can.
If you look at the thing that the printout, it just shows like the first 4 days, and then you have to read further down to find the rest. But let's see. Today it's obviously smoky if you haven't looked outside. High of 100 degrees today with a low of 66. Tomorrow, high of 103 with a low of 66. Sunday, a high of 99 with a low of 66. Monday, a high of 99 with a low of 67.
Wow.
Tuesday, high near 103 with a low of 68. Wednesday, a high of 105 with a low of 70.
Okay. So we got some 99s this weekend. Okay. Hey, weather report's always brought to you by Shasta Gas Propane. Shasta Gas Propane. All the propane comes out of one big tank. Oh, yeah. So it's the customer service, and nobody's better than Shasta Gas Propane than that. A veteran-owned business that gives discounts for seniors and veterans. You can give them a call at 365-3793. We're waiting for Congressman LaMalfa to call, and but let's just comment on a few things. One of our chat room people said, does Elder realize that he is a token? Now, that to me is an extremely racist type of comment that you in the chat room always throw out, the word racism. Because he is a black man who has conservative values, who sees what's happening in his community of color and talks about it, he's a token. I think that you are so wrong. And I just don't even know what to say when somebody does that. He said, throughout his career, he's been called Uncle Tom and worse because he doesn't agree with the Democrat line of drivel that people of color are lesser individuals, that they need to be protected. They can't get IDs for voting. It's too hard. A number of other things. And so here's a person of color, grew up in South L.A. Dad was a Marine, by the way, and made a tremendous success of himself and sees what a lot of the problems out there are. To say he's a token was absolutely, what's the word I'm looking for? Vile. There it is, vile. Now, symbolism of Nazis, that also is in our chat room right now. The Nazi symbol, and people say, oh, it's all over. Where in America do you see the Nazi flag flying, officially recognized by anybody? Everybody pretty much knows is that the Nazis were a subspecies. Let me put it that way. They're a subspecies that they systematically wiped out millions of people. as did communist leaders. And we can mention Mao, we can mention Fidel Castro, if you remember the killing fields in Cambodia, always. I mean, systematically wiped out millions of people, the communists did. So to say that it's recognized, my point was this lady, I think it was a lady, right? Did you get a feeling it was a lady? It could have been a guy. Wrote that for 15 years, we've been coming to Reading. We love it. The people are so welcoming to us. She sees one person with a swastika on their arm at a park, and immediately we're all bad people. And I'm going to tell everybody, they're letting Nazis run rampant. Are you kidding? Try to go anywhere in the United States and not see that symbol on somebody. You know, obviously a bad symbol. But to throw the whole community under the bus is just wrong. And why you would publish something like that, my friend, I have no idea. Now, moving on. Let's start with Roberta.
Good morning. Hi, Carl. Thanks for having Larry on. That was just great. And the letter, I'm telling you, for an editor to publish a letter like that in their community, which they say that they love, is absolutely stupid. It just shows that there is ignorance in publishing, and that's what we have to vet more than anything else is the ignorance.
Well, that's what it is. You know, nobody that I know of, and I know a lot of people, I've traveled in a lot of places, nobody I know of has ever advocated Nazism. I'm sorry, they just don't. You can be a hard right conservative as people are. They don't advocate Nazism. I mean,
no.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
You know the little strawberry stand down on Douglas Boulevard?
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, one day somebody had put those swastikas all over that stand.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned it to my daughter-in-law, and she said, oh, it's no big deal. It doesn't mean anything. And so I had to tell her what it meant, what the symbol is. And my gosh, she probably was in her 30s at that time.
And she didn't know what it meant?
No, had no idea.
Well, let's just think about that for a second. How come she wouldn't even know that?
Well, that's right, and she is considered a scholar. She's did very well in school and college educated, and it's just amazing. So anyway, just wanted to share that. So.
Is she? Does she know where Mexico is? Does she know? Did you ever ask her? Is Mexico south or north of us? I asked my years ago. I asked my stepdaughters that they were in high school, and she just looked at me, and I thought, well, is it just her because she was pretty bright, or is it they just don't teach them things?
Well, that's the problem. They're not taught, and our history is going by the wayside, but then the world history is going by the wayside also. So we need to keep history alive in our families.
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you?
Yep.
Okay, thanks a lot, Roberta.
Bye-bye.
All right. Terry, good morning. Hello, Terry, you're on.
Hey, how you doing, Carl?
I'm pissed. But besides
okay, watch yourself now. Take a breath.
Don't worry, we got the delete button working again.
Anyway, yeah, I just got on the chat room, haven't gotten on it for a long, long time. I get emails every day, phone calls every day about the stuff that goes on there, and I'm reading it now, and I'm frankly getting off. only because I want to hear what's on the program. I'm glad that Lamoth is coming on, but even with you having to defend yourself on this chat room.
I'm not defending myself.
Well, halfway through it, I went back. And defending yourself on just trying to justify some things on there when you're trying to bring Larry Elder out to speak and you're trying to bring information to the public. I don't know what to tell you, brother.
You know what? I look at small percentages of people. Somebody that would call Larry Elder a token, I just totally think, wow, what a racist comment that is. And then I put that person in that category. And Doug's on the other line, Terry, so we've got to run.
All right, sounds great.
Thank you. Congressman Doug Lamoth, good morning, Congressman.
Hey, good morning.
Oh, it's been a busy day. Larry Elder was on this morning.
We had Larry on, really.
And I tell you what, he's got a lot of ideas, and he's not afraid to say it. So
he did pretty well there.
Oh, he did great. We're trying to get everyone in the gubernatorial on there. Kevin Kiley was on, did a good job. We're going to try and get Ted Gaines on. I don't know if we'll get Caitlin or not, but we're going to try. But his plan, I mean. You know, he went after the education system, of course, the COVID shutdown, the things that are going on in our state, which is just driving us down.
Did he mention water and forestry?
I did, and that's what I want to talk to you. That's my first question. I saw that you were out at Orville Dam, and I really liked your statement there. Then they made the announcement yesterday that electricity is now off, and it's how many 100,000 homes? It's hundreds of thousands of homes now are...
Yeah, depending... Well, you know, here's the real deal. It was already off when we were there. I mean, there's six large turbines in that plant there. And when they lean on them hard, they could make up to 900,000 megawatts, right? And so... And I think that's over a 24-hour period. But typical running is about 450,000 megawatts. When we were standing up there, they were making 10, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they were already down to just barely enough to keep the thing, you know, it's like pushing your car or something, right? So, to do that, they were pulling water from upper lakes, I think, just in order to keep Lake Oroville's level just high enough just to keep it flowing. So, it's over with there because of water management, and so, you know, for everybody that likes electricity, you're not going to get it from Lake Oroville anymore.
Well, when you say water,
until probably January. So that means other areas have to be leaned on for electricity production, electricity importation, whatever. So you know.
Well, you said use the term water management. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know. Water is a fairly finite thing. It goes in seasons, right? So you have X amount you're going to start the year with in Lake Shasta, Lake Oroville, Folsom, San Luis Reservoir, you know, all the other smaller ones that are up and down our state. So you should probably kind of make an assessment. How do you want to use your water on March 1? Well, the government at all the levels has decided that it seems that fish temperature water is the most important thing. Even in the second year of what they're calling a drought, you know, I mean, I want to put some real numbers together on, we still got snow, we still got rain. And so how does that compare? You know, I think the media likes to say record drought, record this, record, no, it's record usage, okay? You guys are dumping water like it's going out of style. And so the state water board, along with their environmental organizations, has decided like, well, we're going to go ahead and push all the water we want out of Lake Shasta and back that up with Oroville and Folsom when it gets farther down the delta. And so the spring run salmon can have the temperature that it needs, right? Or they perceive that it needs. So they were going ahead and jamming water out of Lake Shasta. They pulled from the top level of the lake. Back in March, April, whatever timeline it was, and because it was still cool then, right? It hadn't had the summer heat in it. So they pulled water off the top of the lake and dumped down the river It wasn't going to agriculture. It didn't go through a turbine at the dam either because they wanted to use the top of the lake while it was perceivably cooler downstream. They didn't run it through the bottom of the dam because that water is even colder, and they wanted to save that bottom of the lake coldest water for later in the summer to keep the fish cool going down the Sacramento River. So what do you get out of that? That means about 300,000 acre feet on top of the lake did not get used for making power as well as being run down the stream. It was basically fish only, unless there was some municipal use or ag, probably not a lot of ag use during that time of year. That's what they did. That's what those groups decided. And when you go talk to them, you may recall me and my staff kind of did a district-wide tour back, I think it was end of May. And we visited with DWR folks at Lake Oroville. We visited with Bureau of Reclamation folks up at Mount Shasta. Both of them, when we're talking about the water behind those two large lakes, combined they hold 8 million acre feet. And they were both full in 2019, only 2 years ago. We asked them, so what's the strategy going to be going from here on the water use and stuff? Like, well, we got to make sure we maintain these water temperature goals. Temperature for what? Well, for the fish. But that means you're letting water out that isn't going to even turn a turbine or may or may not used by people during a crisis there where, you know, acres, you know, 1 million acres of ag ground have been left out. You're telling people they have to ration water in the city, yet you're making no cuts on fish water. And the same thing is happening now with Oroville. When it still had water that could be running on turbines, it's kind of upside down of Shasta. They also have what they call a river valve at the very bottom of Lake Oroville, at the bottom of the dam there, that doesn't go through the turbines that would generate power. Back when the lake, you know, was higher up, like 750 feet or whatever, you know, it runs out of the ability to turn the turbines about 645 mm-hmm. or so. Okay. So they could have run it through the turbines all through that timeline. Until it actually did run out. You know, okay, we know it's going to run out sometime. But they said, no, we want that coldest water off the bottom of the lake. And so we have the luxury these days of letting water out that everybody could be using, only in order to try and make the temperature of the river 1 degree colder. And now they're screwing around with that up on Lake Almanor. They want to put what's called the thermal curtain inside the lake in front of the dam, as if they don't have enough problems up there. But the thermal curtain would cause the water that goes out the bottom to have to be able to come from the top and push its way down to the, or, well, it's a thing to keep warmer water in the lake and colder water
right,
coming out the
right.
bottom.
There's thermoclines in it. Yeah.
So that deal will probably end up, since that's a smaller lake, end up making that lake warmer and make it look more like Clear Lake or somebody down there in Lake County where they're getting all this hydrilla and all this other green stuff growing. That is not good either because you're raising the temperature of the lake in order to lower the Feather River temperature 1 degree. So there's a long, long explanation about water priorities they have, and people are not it. You know, when you have the Russian River over there, they just flat took their water starting this week, and you got guys with, you know, orchards and vineyards and all that stuff that they're going to have to go knock the fruit off their trees and off their vines now in order to take some of the energy away that the trees and the vines use to stay alive and focus just on keeping the tree itself or the vine itself alive and not making fruit, if that all makes sense. And this is mid-season. You know, they said, oh, we're just going to do it now. And when you get down to how many acre feet actually these things use when they're already in production up to speed, you don't need that much water percentage-wise to finish your season on these crops and have a subsistence. But let's take it anyway. So this fish deal, this environment deal has finally... They've gotten their dream come true in California. It's trumping everything else.
When you were in the legislature here, the water problems, I don't know if they were as bad as they are now. What kind of you know?
Carl, if you want to look at a chart on that, it's probably a little, you know, pointy headed or whatever. But I went back and looked at called CDEX. CDEC, the California Data Exchange Center.
Yeah.
It has a lot of information going on. I live over by Lake Oroville, so I was looking at the numbers on that. It seems to be Shasta's lake levels seem to be a little more resilient the way that system works over there, and maybe because it's federal. But even just taking Lake Oroville, for example, at full 3.5 million acre feet, which is 900 foot elevation. So you can go back and look at the numbers. I've looked at them all the way back to 1968 on a monthly basis. So it doesn't take a whole day to look at it on a monthly. But when you look at the high at a season when the lake is full, and at the end of the season at its low level, they're much closer together numbers than what they are these days. If it's full now, they drain the sucker by the time that the lake is over. Two, three, 4 decades ago, the lake, they didn't draw it down really that far because there wasn't that much being called upon. Now we do have an increased population. I think agriculture really hadn't increased acreage that much up and down the state in that period of time. You know, it has some, but not as dramatic as the population rise. But the biggest thing is the environmental demands have just skyrocketed in the last 40 years. That's why we don't seem to have much water being held by, and it doesn't matter what the conditions are. So when I was kind of saying Newsom and the gang in Sacramento decided, yo, we're gonna go ahead and use this water for the spring run, and we're gonna save the rest for the fall run. We're gonna run as if there's no drought. We're gonna operate the idea that there's nothing wrong, there's nothing going on. We're gonna dump as much water as you want for the spring run and the fall run in Sacramento, as well as over here in the Feather River. And that's why people are seeing all over the place, or anecdotally, they're noticing, like, it looks like the river's running as full as it ever does, kind of like when they're dumping water in the winter when the lake's getting full.
Yeah.
Because they are dumping a lot of water. It's going down to that. It's going down to the delta. You know, the delta is a whole situation where they have to try and keep water pushed out to keep salt water from coming up the ocean, you know, the desalination in its own way, I guess. And then also, what isn't talked about much is, and there's this lady on Facebook who does a tremendous job with her page. She's pointing out how much all the municipalities that circle or have input in the Delta are letting sewage out into that. And we're paying the price because we have to dump water here in order to dilute the Delta enough for their raw sewage dumpage because they don't have municipal systems that can handle their own thing. That's what we're doing.
What Facebook page is that? What Facebook page is that, Congressman? Do you remember?
It's called, it's kind of a long name, but it's the California Water for Food and People Movement.
Okay.
And you got to stick all that. But I would totally recommend that anybody listening follow that page if you want to get a straight story from, this is from a gal who's not particularly political or all that stuff, but she's starting to point out who's the who on this thing, but she doesn't really want it to be a political page. She wants to be facts about water and where it's going and where it's been going. We've wasted so much water, we wouldn't be anywhere close to a water crisis. If we had, you know, 5 more million acre feet, 3 more million acre feet that was stored right now, you wouldn't be devastating ag. You wouldn't be telling people flush twice a day or, you know, don't wash any clothes or stuff like that.
Well, that leads me to that next question. I asked Larry Elder about this, and he was up on it, too, when I went about the site's reservoir. That thing's been funded for over 20 years.
Well, not funded.
Maybe not funded, really, but, I mean
it's been on the drawing board for 40, Carl.
Okay.
You know, and there's been a lot of strong push. Well, 20 years is about how long I've been in this racket here, so... I was first visited out there as a state assemblyman about 04-05. The biologist right out there, he's from Fish and Game, as I recall, he said, look, if you can't build it here, you can't build one anywhere environmentally because there's just nothing out there that can really be hurt environmentally. Now, they'll make something up as they get close, but the voters of California just a few years ago voted in Prop 1 bond money. You know, he had another bond called the Safe, Clean, Reliable Drinking Water Act of the year 20XX, right? So, there's about, in our water commission down there in Sacramento, you know, it's a $7.5 billion bond. And, the amount that was devoted to that towards actual water storage is about one third. They got their usual two thirds going for buying land and, you know, more recycling this or more that, you know, let's say, you know what, recycling is fine, but if you don't build something, you're not upping the size of the pie. So, But they frittered around on that and have given only $900 billion allocation of the $2.5 billion eligible of $7.5 billion, if I'm not losing you here, for building that structure. Now, and then some of the rest of the $2.5 billion is going for other smaller projects. You know, they're increasing the size of a dam in the East Bay area somewhere, which is fine. It's got increased capacity. They have the ability to do San Luis Reservoir, but they don't run the federal and state pumps to fill San Luis Reservoir. You know, because it has to draw from outside the south of the Delta to fill that project. And so there's another one over there, I think Los Vaqueros. I think they're raising that. So they're doing a little bit, but on the big, big size project, sites would hold 1.5 million acre feet as it is right now. It has a potential of 1.9 million acre feet, but Fish and Game came in and shut that down, saying, like, well, we don't want you drawing out of three different places of the river because it might not be good for the fish run. You know, we're only talking, they're going to use the Tame Occlusive Canal, which put in about 2,000 CFS. They'll use the Glen Occlusive Canal, which put about 2,000 CFS. They're both existing canals that they'll utilize to take over to the west side and fill Sites Reservoir. They want to build a third inlet strictly for going straight from the river, straight west, to that would have been another 2,000. They also would have the ability to do reverse flow and make electricity with it when it's coming down. But they decided, like, well, the difference between 4,000 and 6,000 CFS made Fish and Game of California nervous, and so they said, you know, they started making bad rattly noises about that, which would have scared everybody trying to build the project. They said, okay, we'll downsize the project and we'll have the third canal. We'll just do this. Environmentalists are ruling things with a steel glove, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Now, we got to take a break here. We skipped the first one, but let's take a quick break here, Congressman.
Imagine we did.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk. Somebody's got a good question here. So you think about it. We've got a marijuana problem, growing problem. It destroys water. It pollutes our water, and is a big problem. Is there any way that the feds can come in here and help our local agencies clean this mess up? That's one. And then two, we're going to talk fires. When we come back. So, hey, this portion of the show brought to you by Crackmaster Windshield Repair. You know, he is the dean of windshield repair specialist anywhere in the North State. Jeff Wurst, it's a better-known business. He will give you a free consultation on your windshield. If he can't fix it, he'll tell you right there he's not going to take your money, whether it's he's going to fix anything from a small chip to a crack over 2 feet in length. That's Jeff Wurst, Crackmaster Windshield Repair. Give him a call at 241-8373 for an appointment, or stop by 3208 South Market Street. That's Crackmaster Windshield Repair. We'll be right back after these short messages.
Let us brighten up your summer. Head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to play our Sunny Money Staycation Swipe to Win promotion. Swipe daily to win free slot play and prizes. Weekly drawings Thursdays at 6, 7, and 8 p.m. Plus, winners receive bonus entries into the final drawings. August 26th, a houseboat vacation from Bridge Bay at Shasta Lake. Plus, $500 cash and a $1,000 gift card from Costco. September 30th, another $10,000 up for grabs at Wind River Resort and Casino. More drawings, more winners, more fun. WindRiver.com.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Summer is upon us, and we all know what that means. Lots of summertime fun. Spend at the lake, by the pool, or off on adventures to your favorite waterfall or floating down the river. Servicing your vehicle is last on the list, but we all know it has to be done. Let Premier Oil Change save you time and money with their easy drive-in service. No appointment needed. Wait in the comfort of your own car, enjoy a cold beverage, and before you know it, you'll be off to your next summertime adventure, knowing that your car is summertime ready. Earn reward points for every dollar you spend, which can be redeemed for an oil change, additional services, and other great rewards. With free fluid top-offs, free check engine light inspections, free Wi-Fi, and a free car wash, you are sure to leave refreshed. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit them in Palisadro in the Holiday Shopping Center, or in Redding on Lake Boulevard near Waterworks Park. And don't forget Anderson, across from Round Table Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot. Phone lines here, 605-4567. Hop in our chat room at KCNR1460.com. I'm deleting them as fast as they come in, Jared, but not all of them, of course. It is 8:34 here on the 6th of August, 70 degrees out there. This portion of the show brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop, my barbershop of choice for 14 years. Veteran-owned business that gives discounts for seniors and veterans. They work by appointments only. I was there Wednesday. Thought I'd start off my new year of birth, anniversary of my birth, with a fresh haircut, and Logan gave it to me. Either Logan or Tim. I go back and forth there. They're both great. 244-9478 appointments, and it's man's last stronghold. And if I ever get the congressman here and enough time, I'm going to drag you down there, congressman, to Cypress Square Barbershop.
Well, it'd be good to go hang out at Man's Last Stand, right?
So. Last Stronghold. Well, it could be Last Stand.
Stronghold. Yeah, okay. Maybe I'm feeling a little cynical or negative right now. I don't know. Yeah. Stronghold. Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm going to give a little background on this. But we have very close friends that had a ranch up in Antelope Creek. A day ago, they thought they'd lost everything from the fires. And then they found out that they were blessed, that the fire was moving so fast it kind of like ran on both sides of their buildings there. It ran on both sides of it. It chased Cal Fire and their groundskeeper out. I mean, they were surrounded by fire on the road as they went out. And then they moved over to the firefighters were in Tenet, literally fighting house to house to save those fires in Tenet, or save the houses in Tenet. We are having every year, it seems like, a new crescendo of fires. I think that small town, was it Greenville? Burnt down. Just burnt. We were facing this every year. A close friend of mine who fought fires for years, retired firefighter, said, this has been going on for years. How is it? What? Why? What needs to be done at the federal level and the state level to stop this?
Well, you know, 100 years ago, we've implemented the smoking the fire type way of thinking, right? We want to put out fires and not let them burn naturally like they did before basically the Europeans got here, okay? So, all right, well, there's merit in that. If we put them out, we also have to do the other things that fire used to do. You know, cleansing of the forest floor of a lot of dead stuff, brush, this and that and the other. And for, you know, a long time, we were still doing that. You know, as Forest Service and our foresters were out there, they were looking at things with a balanced approach. Well, the environmental movement got a hold of things, let's say, starting in the 70s and stronger in the 80s and through the 90s, and pretty much we have a don't touch it policy that is sought by the environmental movement and the people that have been hired up by people like the, you know, the Clinton administration, Obama administration, and others that trickle in there, or when Republicans decide to, hey, we need to have an environmental portfolio, let's start doing this, doing that, you know. So it ain't working. It isn't helping, because a hands-off approach to the forest at the same time that you are putting out fires when they're a smaller, cooler-burning, slow-moving fires. Now we've had so much inventory of fuel build up that there's no such thing anymore, because all the forest, except for that what's in private hands and whatever work does get done of government-owned lands, it's just loaded with inventory. You can't hardly stop it. So
why hasn't there been a federal Why hasn't there been a federal bill introduced then that says this is how we're going to handle this? You know, there, it's the fires are burning in the footprint of old fires now.
Me and my colleagues haven't just been watching. We are running this legislation, you know. And I had a bill that actually did succeed in getting through the House in 2018. Just a simple one. Make the process of looking around power lines more streamlined instead of having to wait months and months for a permit from a federal agency. You know, when the utility identifies, hey, we got some hazardous trees here, they should be able to take it down right now without permission, in my view. You know, I mean, it's not like they're going to cut the whole forest down. That's what the environments are the greatest of, like, we're going to cut all the trees from here to Oregon, right? So, well, that's not the case. They want to just have clearance around power lines that makes sense. What happens when a tree hits a power line? Two bad things. Blackouts, and then whatever the fire risk is going to be from that particular area, you know, which seems to be big ones, right? Campfire was equipment hitting, somehow causing fire below its power line, and this one, the Dixie Fire, seems to be a green tree fell into it, one that probably wasn't a hazardous tree. We don't really know yet, and we don't know if we'll ever know. Priority, I think, of the investigators is going to be that we go ahead and blame PG&E for that tree, and they're going to probably want to tilt it that way. So, but it was a green tree that fell in the Feather River Canyon up against a power line. You know, the crazy thing about that, Carl, was that I had been up to the Beckworth Fire up on the east side there in Lassen County area, viewing that for most of the same day. You know, talking with the folks there, where you guys getting what you need in the Lassen and Plumas County on that great big fire, the town of Doyle that burned on the east side there. Anyway, so as I was returning home down the Feather River Canyon that evening, I got down in the area there where this Dixie fire started. I went through there probably, oh, rough guess, 45 minutes after maybe the fire had struck, because I could see the spire of flames way up on the mountaintop. It's a rocky mountaintop above the river there. I go, oh, crud. Now, there was personnel already had already arrived and trying to figure out what to do about it. You know, Cal Fire was on the ground there, and they're trying to figure out how to get the backside across the river and all that. So I was leaving one fire starting and watching another one after it had been just within hours of starting. And this is what we have now, 400,000 acres on this thing. And it's eaten already two towns. You know, Greenville, as I mentioned, we toured Greenville yesterday, and we wanted to go on up to Canyon Dam as the personnel decided, you know, whether it was safe or proper to. So they said, okay, let's do it. So Canyon Dam is just a small berg there, kind of just off the southeast tip of Lake Almanor, as you see it on the map there. And as we're approaching, I'm thinking not good things. And because the fire, you can see it straight ahead, the straightaway there is above the roadway in the distance, and it's orange, and it's the wind is howling. You know, previously down the road there was a breeze, you know, 10 miles an hour, 5, 15, whatever might gust. We already had a swirling wind there, and just in the 10 minutes we were in Canyon Dam, it came from the west at us, and the giant orange ball that was coming said, guys, we got to get out of here, you guys. So we were there probably 5 minutes before before Candy Dam ceased to exist. And there's just not the words.
I know. I was going to say,
what this,
you know,
means.
We were
toured Greenville, you know, 20 minutes earlier and walking amongst that. Greenville itself looks like probably 50% of it is still, the buildings still stand there, you know, on the very west side of town, the very east side of town. So there's still work to be done there. There's helicopters working on the east side. The west side could get hit again from the fire coming around another corner, so Greenville could get hit three times. And then Crescent Mills is a town about 2 or 3 miles south and around the corner from Greenville. They're making a defense on the west side of that right now, too. It survived the night, but it's dicey there too. So, you know, I'm just, what kind of domino of small mountain towns are we going to continue to see here? You need to worry about Chester still a little bit. They did a good job of around the fire past Chester and parts of area of East Lake Almanor. And now Westwood, it's like Almanor is going to be like if you throw a chain around a post or something like that, the two ends whip. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
The two ends are whipping around the north side of Lake Almanor and kind of the east side of Lake Almanor. There's another reservoir called Mount Valley Reservoir just south of the town of Westwood. It's working its way up to that, and I don't know if it's going to do an end run around that, but town of Westwood, which I've thought about when I've over there, you know, knocking on doors or just going through, that this scares me to death on what would happen if a fire came through there. And so they're going to be on major evac if they aren't already.
Uh-huh. Well, here's something that you can't do, but we have, you know, I talked to a forest management person from Sierra Pacific 11 years ago, and she told me, she says, the way we fight fires is just going to be different. We need to have more air tankers and helicopters than this. We have squadrons of helicopters that belong to the, you know, like at the Marine Corps. They've got heavy lift. They've got a number of birds. If we could, you know, if you engage them in the fight, they could also, I mean, they could be dumping everywhere. We could fill the skies with aircraft. And it doesn't negate anything about fighting it on the ground. But to help, you know, have we reached the point where we need to engage? You know, we've sent battalions of Marines out to fight fires.
Carl, when the winds we've had Wednesday and Thursday, you can't fight fire against that in this overloaded material.
Okay.
In these overloaded forest inventories. You can't fight that. You can hope that you can steer it, maybe. But, you know, I was watching the helicopters fly yesterday on that area around Canyon Dam, and that's not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, okay. if the area, if you don't have that wind, if the conditions were like they were for the first, you know, 10 days of the fire, yeah, they were able to corral that and move that. They were able to do dozer lines. And then at nighttime when it was high humidity, there's no wind and stuff. They were setting backfires away from the dozer lines to burn into the black spot they already had, which made total sense. You know, like people sometimes hear the term backfire, like, no, it can be a very good tool. They were using it wisely, and they were doing some amazingly good stuff out of Dixie Fire on the west side of 32 and 36, a little bit around Chester and the south side of Lake Almanor. And I'm less versed on how it did over near the Quincy side, but so it was working pretty good. But what you can't prevent is when you have so much forest inventory, and they're telling me some of the factors forget on how dry it is. They have a dry factor of like 99 or 100, which means if you got a ball of embers going along, 99 out of 100 of them are going to light something. You know, I mean, that's just my loose way of describing it, but you can't put that out. So what does that mean? You have to hope for good weather when it is going on. You hope you don't get these windy conditions and hot conditions. They said Wednesday was a almost historic, perfect, great day if you want to have a fire problem. So we have to be out there ahead of time. We have to be out there. We can't do it all with tankers and helicopters. We have to put large buffer zones around towns, around areas where you want to make a defense every once in a while. That means very, very thinned out forest for, you know, I think you need about a mile and a half wide strip every once in a while. And people are going to lose their minds because I want to cut that many trees. But I've just seen what's happened here.
Yeah.
And when the embers can kick over, they can go up in the air when they're doing this high-speed stuff, they can kick ahead a mile and a half. Then you got to have a pretty wide buffer set up every once in a while, like, you know, a defensive line in warfare, right?
Yeah.
The Maginot Line or something like that. It can't be just 100 yards wide because it's so easy for it to skip over it. So now with the urban folks or with the environmental folks, and say like, well, maybe if we just started moving people out of the rural areas and people shouldn't live in the forest. People should live in towns like that where they used to, you know, mine and used to do logging, used to do things like that. I don't know where the hell they're going to get their wood products and their paper products or things that they're going to make their car batteries out of if nobody's mining or logging. So, you know, we're going to have a real reckoning here where people that vote for these people and put them in are going to enjoy this water drought that we're already enjoying in agriculture and the fire that we get to live amongst every year. When stuff starts running out, Carl, if we don't get record rainfall this year that fills Shasta, and probably even more so Lake Oroville. I don't see how agriculture is going to get any water that comes from a lake. It'll have to be all well water. Wow. I don't see how it's going to happen. These guys are so bold now in taking water away from people, not respecting the strongest water rights that go pre-1914. Sacramento's on a rampage on this, and Biden administration is not far behind. You preface the question here, what are we doing legislatively? I got to build that simple bill, you know, to clean around power lines faster.
Right.
Got it through the House pretty good. And when it got over to the Senate, you need 60 votes over there. And so we only had about 52 or 3 Republicans. Probably a couple of the Northeast ones are nervous about, you know, doing anything to trees. So we had to compromise the bill way down to get a 60-vote bill as part of it. And then even at that point, tuck it into an appropriations package to get it through. I'm proud and glad we got it through, but I know that that wasn't nearly enough for what we need to be doing. But that's the
reality
game of possible right now. Yeah. So I'll take incremental chunks and keep trying to build on them because that's what we do. It's my job is to try and get something done even if I don't get all of it done. So we propose all sorts of bills, all sorts of ideas, and try to put the spending and focus it where it should be. Me and my Republican colleagues, you know, especially that are on Natural Resources Committee, that are on the Ag Committee, which Ag Committee oversees U.S. Forest Service. I had to get a pledge out of an incoming Forest Service chief, the head of the whole Forest Service in the U.S. And he said, okay, we are going to not have the monitor policy. We're going to attack fires at the very beginning. The Tamarack Fire down on the east side of California, mid-state, they monitored it for 12 days. Okay, the lava fire up north of us, they thought they had it out. They were kind of monitoring it there. Well, it caught again. And so you talked about marijuana. I mean, that was in the marijuana country right up there, too. The marijuana grows, they're out of control. And there's like 4,000 of these tube tent greenhouses that have been built up there in Siskiyou County, just right out there. They're doing it on private land. They got clever on that. The private land is all owned by, you know, a lot of it by either people from China or the Hmong people that have moved up there, or some of it is owned by Eastern Europeans there. This is cartel stuff going on, and a small county like Siskiyou is overwhelmed by all that, but they're getting their arms around it. I know I was talking to Shasta supervisors about that a little bit. Shasta's trying to get their arms around it, looking at the Siskiyou model, because people are sick of it. These guys are getting away with literally murder with some of the people that you've got to human trafficking going on in some of these areas there, especially the big grows. And you have the environmental damage, you have the cartel activity, which is dangerous to go out to as the threatening towns up there, Siskiyou, for pushing back. It's really, really bad stuff. And the environmental stuff, they're getting away with using chemicals, they're getting away with putting up buildings without permits that you or I couldn't, you know, pound a nail on a deck to repair it without somebody coming out demanding a permit. These guys are just getting away with it until finally the sheriff, the DA, and others have put their foot down up there in Siskiyou County. But you said, what can the Fed and the state do on helping? They're not going to help. The state loves marijuana. You know, they passed that initiative down there. Department of Justice isn't doing anything about it. The governor's not doing anything about it. Biden administration is really not going to help a whole lot on it, and their DOJ. Maybe their DOJ will feel some obligation to do the most blatant stuff. But they're all favor this marijuana stuff. And even in the Trump era, trying to get some of those guys, you know, there's folks on the libertarian side that say, well, we should just have these marijuana bills. You know, it doesn't hurt anybody. Like, well, I suppose a legally one-run grow. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we've completely skipped over that last break, but I would like to shift gears here
just
for
a
second.
Lots of breaks here in a
minute. No. We've only got 8 minutes
left. I'm
kidding.
You gotta make money.
Yeah, send some in from your pack here. Okay. The infrastructure package, I'm a little confused about it. Are we spending money on the roads? I mean, where are we with that infrastructure package? I heard it was bipartisan.
Oh, it's kind of bipartisan because some of the senators are going for it here, but we don't really know what it is because they haven't really put meat on the bones of the thing yet. What it is about that package is about $900 billion. $350 billion is already authorized stuff, so they're going to reshuffle it and then appropriate for it would be the theory. $550 billion is new. It does have some infrastructure in it, but it isn't all that. Some of it's going to be devoted towards high-speed rail, or local transit and stuff, our highways and bridges already suffer enough. You know, and it's so hard to get something that's really, truly infrastructure when these guys want to cloud it up by putting social spending in there. Social spending is a conversation you have on its own, whether you like it or you don't or whatever it is. You know, but when you have these ridiculous Democrats saying, like, well, child care is infrastructure, or, you know, like, have you guys lost your minds completely? And you're sitting there insulting us on camera by saying stuff like that? You know, I'm up to here with it. Don't call that infrastructure. Don't try to keep fooling people with it. And with, you know, I mean, all the lying about COVID is all over TV. Oh, get the vax. You know, people are, no wonder they're pushing back on all this stuff. You know, because I can't hardly watch a story anymore and believe what they're saying on the news. You know,
I think most people are like that, though.
We ask the question, what does this really mean, what they're saying? So you take with a giant grain of salt.
Okay.
But the marijuana, we're going to have to use resources locally, and we're going to have to be vigilant about it. And so I hope, you know, the SASTA supervisors will kind of clear the deck of normal politics and push forward on some of the things I know that they're looking at. It's pretty heavy on the east side. The most rural areas of the county. Yeah.
Chief, newly appointed.
When they squeeze the balloon of Siskiyou, they're going to come look for other places for it.
Well,
you know,
the newly appointed sheriff, Mike Johnson, was on the show, and he said one of his first priorities is to go after the marijuana, the illegal.
Mike is a good guy. He's a great guy. It's going to be good. He's going to need a few weeks to get his feet under him there and get some things. So don't get after him for something not happening immediately. And for the supervisors, they're going to adopt this. There needs to be a little bit of time to do it right, because you've got to have everybody in concert together. Because if the sheriff tries to do it by himself, he doesn't have the DA standing ready, and he doesn't have the other departments of the county. You know, it's going to take down to even the property assessors and people like that. In the county system to be helpful. It's got to be a full, strong team, because they will come after you for saying, oh, like, you're racist for going after this, or you're trying to go against whatever proposition. You know, they'll play every trick, and the news reports that. You know, I was up there in Siskiyou. I got to run a bulldozer on some of those sites, helping those guys out for a little while, and all they want to talk about is what the race is of the people that are illegally doing these grows. It doesn't matter what the race is. They're doing something illegal that is against every law, and they need to be held accountable for it, and they need to be have that stuff rooted out there, because it's all illegally put in and all illegally grown. You know, but that's a fight you fight. The media even gets involved in trying to distort the story a little bit. You get the SACB, you get the others, you know, saying, why are they? These people are just trying to make a living out there. Like, bull crap! They're violating every aspect of county ordinances on buildings and the water use, illegal water use. It's just ridiculous. So
did I get your blood pressure up today?
I just took my pill a while ago.
Hey, you know what? This was a two cup. You know, I have a mug. I usually drink just one mug of coffee. I went through that in the first hour, and I'm past my second one right now. I've got to step away. Doug,
I better get running from this.
Yep.
So thanks for having me on. And
absolutely.
We'll talk to you pretty soon, okay?
Okay,
right.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right, bye. Wow. He's fired up. You know what? But here's the thing. When is it going to become enough of a problem in our state that the state says we're going to clear out all the burnt logs that we can still use? We're going to start clearing out these areas and making electricity with it, with cogen plants, because something's got to take the place of Orville. And the one thing the congressman said that I hardly agree with is, if we get another year without the rain, what's that mean? Does Lake Shasta go down? Do we lose electricity from there? And what impact is that going to have on us? We seem to think that, we have the ability to fight these fires. And as Congressman points out, yeah, but nature is, you know, it's hard to fight Mother Nature when she's got all of this dry timber and winds blowing. And, you know, it's one of those perfect storms. But if you take away the fuel, it can't burn like that. It just, you know, so anyway, my friends, again, thank you for all the birthday greetings yesterday. I feel, it's nice to hear people say nice things about you, even if it's only one day a year. On Monday, we got Shasta College coming in. We got more people coming in. We've got we're going to have the new head of the Visitors Bureau on next week. We've got just a number of guests next week that we can say. You miss a day, you miss a lot here. We're going to try and get a couple more of the gubernatorial candidates that are running. I've been impressed by both people I've talked to, Larry Elder and Kevin Kiley. We're going to get Ted Gaines on, a number of people like that. The other thing, too, is when people point at our town and say that we're a neo-Nazi group because of seeing one person, I feel sad for that person. That says, oh, gosh, and I keep coming back to this because it is so bothersome to me. They've been coming to this town for 15 years, being welcomed, and they see one person. And so that makes the whole town bad. There's a small percentage of people that you don't want to hang around with that you go, well, there's somebody.